Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Civitas On Air podcast, where we bring to you informed debate and discussion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Civitas Air podcast. I'm your host, Khushi Domne. Today I have Dr. Umaya Akbaga from the Institute of Sociology and Collegium Civitas. Dr. Umaya has conducted a pilot study focusing on menstruation poverty among refugee women in the refugee camps in Poland. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Umaya.
Thank you for having me, Khushi. Nice to be here.
In your pilot study, you noted a rise in menstrual poverty among women displaced due to war and economic deprivation. Could you perhaps elaborate on the idea of menstrual poverty and explain why it is so common among displaced women in refugee camps?
Thank you for that question. First of all, I would like to simplify the definition of menstrual poverty as the inability of people who menstruate to afford menstrual product. And this does not just apply to women who are displaced, but this applies to women who live in disadvantaged communities, women who do not have the means, the economic means of buying and sustaining their periods and resorting to alternative use of menstrual product, and also skipping schools among young girls, not being because they're on their period and they cannot afford to, you know, buy menstrual product that would sustain them throughout the school year or throughout the school period or every month. So they have to stay at home so that they can use other kinds of menstrual products that would not body shame them or that would not leak. And this is usually common among poor communities, disadvantaged communities, the refugee camps, and it's happening everywhere in the world, in Africa, in Asia, in Europe, in Americas, and everywhere you can imagine that women who cannot afford menstrual products can experience such kind of inability to buy them.
So your pilot study main subject is refugee population and living circumstances in Poland. What factors are you examining to comprehend how women keep their menstrual hygiene in these camps?
First of all, I was in the pilot study to see how they live, what is the living condition, first of all, to see how they're able to struggle between being members of the society. I was checking those factors concerning their health in general. How do they access medical facilities? And I started to check also what are the needs, what are the basic needs. This pilot study was just, you know, finding the right, how do I call it, the right factors, the right tools to see if women living in such environment can afford the menstrual product. I was checking this from the sociological angle to see how does migration affect the stability of women who menstruate and women who come from different communities, how are they able to cope with their monthly cycle? And also considering the factors that they have to live with other people who do not share the same culture as they do share. So I was checking all of those factors, and also how do they maintain this menstrual hygiene in terms of looking at accessibility to water and some other strategies to sanitary hygiene. When you talk about the wash strategy, to think about menstrual health and menstrual hygiene. Yeah.
So how does the lack of sufficient and accessibility facilities in refugee camps affect women and young girls' menstruation health and hygiene?
It does affect. I would say, for example, in the camps, there are no hygienic products. When I talk about hygienic products, hand washing products, detergents to wash their clothes, they have to buy by themselves. They have to get this by themselves. So the only thing they have is water. And in the bathrooms, there are no towels to even clean after use. There are no tissue papers to use after you go to the toilet. All of those things contribute to the inability to maintain a proper hygiene when it comes to your menstruation. And from my observation, I discovered that these women can't afford to buy those things on a regular basis. So they depend on NGOs or civil society organizations to buy this product for them. There's a limit to which the government can provide all of this for the number of people living in the camp. And without those facilities available to them, it reduces the dignity of women who menstruate or people who menstruate, because for them to be able to buy this and sustain on a regular basis, it's kind of difficult. And this is not the priority for some of the women. It's not menstruation. It's either food, shelter, and the next psychological means of stabilizing their lives in the society where they found themselves.
And from what countries have you seen the refugee women, most of them?
They're from everywhere in the world you can think about. I met, during my pilot study, I met women from Congo, from Cameroon, from Ghana, from Bulgaria, from Iran, from Russia, from Belarus. I also found women from Somalia as well. And I met two women also from India.
And what about Syrian women?
In the camp, I did not get to meet the Syrian women because some of them already left to a different camp. So this particular camp I went to was the one not too far from Warsaw. So in other areas, I learned that there are women from Syria. I have not been able to touch down on those places. And previously, from the conversation that I had with some of the women there, they told me they had women from Afghanistan previously, because once you get your asylum status, you can leave the camp, right? It's an open camp. People from Syria were registered there previously, and women from Afghanistan and Tajikistan also were there for some time, but not at the moment when I was collecting the data. I was collecting the data in February and in April, so at that time I didn't experience or get to meet them in person.
So the women you met, with what kind of difficulties they experienced?
First of all, I would say psychological, because some of them were just coming from the closed camp. And I can just describe the closed camp. It's more like a prison where you don't have access to your phones, you don't have a smartphone, you don't have access to living outside of the camp. You cannot move outside, you cannot go anywhere. And recovering from such kind of psychological trauma was the first thing I had to cope with when they started to tell me their experiences from the closed camp. And then before the 6 months status, they can receive their status for the asylum, they move to the open camp. So this was first thing that I had to, you know, encounter with them, telling me their experiences in the closed camp. And some of them were just a day in the open camp, or 2 days or 3 days or 1 week in the open camp. It was a sense of relief for them, some kind of easing out tension. And another thing was, you know, I was able to listen to their complaints. I was able to listen to all the things they need. So some of them want the smallest thing. Some of them wanted chocolate. Some of them wanted sweets. Some of them told me, oh, single women also would need chocolate. Some of them need someone to listen to them. So that was the thing I encountered, mostly psychological trauma experiences that I was able to grasp from them. And the rest was, oh, I don't like the food that I'm being given here. Is there any way you can help me to buy food from outside? Can you help us to buy this so we can cook by ourselves? They have kitchen. They have the gas. They have the oven to cook, but they don't have utensils to cook. There are no pots. There are no spoons. So you have to bring it yourself to cook. It's like you're being provided with those basic things, but not the actual things that you need.
And when you talk about their trauma, was there any gender violence?
Basically, gender violence, no. Not in terms of being victims, but also as a result of where they were before coming to the open camp. I didn't check for that. I didn't check, or no one shared with me any form of gender-based violence. Probably from their journey to coming to Poland, right? But not at the point of staying in Poland itself. So maybe some of them were victims of domestic violence from their previous partners, or some of them were victims of rape or any other form of violence while on the way to the camp or from their traffickers or anything, but not in the camp itself.
Okay. So what are some practical remedies or initiatives that might be put into place to address menstrual poverty?
When it comes to menstruation poverty, this is a global issue. This is an issue that I see that needs to be addressed when it comes to helping women and people who menstruate to have a sense of dignity, dignified forms of reducing menstrual poverty. Take, for example, in Scotland, in 2021, this Period Product Act was initiated to reduce the cost of buying menstrual product and also to make it available in public places. This is a very good example, which it's laudable or which should be adopted by countries of the world to allow women to be able to afford the cost of menstrual product. Take, for example, removing taxation from period products can help to reduce this, right? And also making it available to young girls in schools would be very good. And also in those public places, such as the camps as well, to make them available or to make some legislations that manufacturers of period products could also produce or organize some workshops to allow women who do not have the means of purchasing such kind of product to make their own period products by themselves, right? This is something that is very realistic. If the cost of period products are reduced, so that women can be able to afford it, it would be very nice, right? And also that should be available wherever you have the public space, because some people will just have some kind of emergencies. You don't predict when it comes, right? You can only project when it comes. But to avoid some kind of embarrassment, it's better to initiate some, how do I call it, some laws or some acts like what Scotland has just done to allow women to be able to afford this and to, you know, to checkmate all the cost of rising product of inflations and all of that can help to reduce period poverty, to make it accessible to those women who cannot afford it, right, in public spaces.
So when you were doing your case study, what kind of products were they using?
Okay. When I was doing this observation, I had this request from someone who told me that she wanted baby diapers. And this was somehow shocking to me to hear that she wanted baby diapers. And my question was that, do you have a baby? And she said, no, it's for me. I was shocked to hear that women use baby diapers. And she was telling me the number of the baby diapers that she wanted. To hear that this is what she uses on a period. So this is one of the product that I observed that one of them need. Probably others were shy to ask for similar kind of product. And this woman's situation is kind of pathetic because she has heavy menstrual flow. So she cannot do anything. She cannot even look for a job or do anything for herself. She's always falling sick and she has become anemic as a result of heavy menstrual flow. So she's using baby diapers. This is one of the products that I found that they were using there. So maybe they use other things. I've not done the research to find out these kind of products. Like, what kind of product do you use? So maybe in the next phase of my research, I would ask some of those questions. But from my observation, only baby diapers was mentioned that they used there.
Okay. So finally, how do you intend to carry out this research after the pilot study? And also, how about the conference which took place on 26th of May?
First of all, to continue this research, I'm getting more interested in menstruation health and to see how I can develop this into the main research. So the next phase of my research would be more like a focus group discussion, because first of all, the first thing I did was to see how to gain their trust. So some of them open up to me on different conditions that they have, different health issues, different gynecological problems. So I think looking at some of these gynecological issues that they've mentioned, I want to go further to do some kind of focus group discussion. I don't want to approach this from interview-based or some kind of survey-based kind of, approach to this research, because it will be too demanding of them to start filling questionnaires or to start filling some surveys which may not align to the actual thing. So I want to do a focus group discussion and introducing my research on a larger scale to them, that I would like to find out some of those things that they feel when it comes to their period. So it may be difficult or challenging, I would say, because I have to struggle with the language. We try to use some midpoint of English language to talk to them. And there is also one person who is always helping with some Russian interpretation to those who don't understand English. And this is what I think I'm going to do next in my research, to ask detailed research questions when it comes to menstruation poverty, detailed questions when it comes to hygiene, the kind of product they use, and also to check if there are gender-based violence, like you mentioned, or if there are other sexual transactions that goes on in the camp, or other things that, you know, may arise from poverty-related issues. This is the approach I think I'm going to take when it comes to this research. And then the next thing would be to finalize if I would be able to do it on a larger scale, if I can get permission to other camps. So not just focusing on one of this, this one that I did, but also to check the rest of the camps around Poland. I hope this would not be too much for me. And then talking about the research that the conference that I attended in Scotland, this was very, very insightful. I felt that, and it was done at St. Andrews University in Scotland. On Friday, we had this conference about menstruation and sustainability. Women from different walks of life talked about menstrual products, technology, how to conduct menstruation research. And this is something that I found really interesting for my further research, that we may need to adopt somewhat research methods on how to ask questions. Would it be from the geographical perspective in terms of body mapping or interviews? How do we approach menstruation research? We also saw at the conference, there was also discussion on how to maintain proper hygiene, also how to do your own tampons using some kind of clothing. And also we talked about the policies and how to monitor those legislations. So at first it was about conversations of the history of menstrual products and sustainability to maintaining menstrual hygiene, and also for people who menstruate, and also eco-shaming. So different approach to eco-shaming of some product, which we think that they should be more sustainable when it comes to maintaining proper hygiene, and how to ensure that manufacturers of this product still maintain the standards of producing them. It was very insightful, and next year it should be in Liverpool, and I hope I'll be able to attend as well and to learn more about menstruation health.
Brilliant. Thank you, Dr. Omaya, for sharing this valuable research with us. We appreciate your efforts to shed light on the issues of menstruation poverty and its impact on displaced women in Polish refugee camps.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Civitas On Air. We cover current and important political and social topics. Our work is produced by researchers and students from Collegium Civitas, together with Radio Palace. Please subscribe to our podcast by visiting your favourite streaming service, like Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And do stay tuned for the next episode.